underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. In Elizabeth Brundage's new novel, All Things Cease to Appear, late one winter afternoon in upstate New York, George Clare comes home to find his wife killed and their three-year-old daughter alone in a room across the hall. He had recently taken a position at a nearby private college teaching art history and moved his family into a tight-knit, impoverished town that has lately been discovered by wealthy outsiders in search of a rural ideal. George is, of course, the immediate suspect, the question of his guilt echoing in a story shot through the secrets both personal and professional. Elizabeth Brundage is the author of the novels A Stranger Like You, Somebody Else's Daughter, and The Doctor's Wife, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Brundage to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Joe. As always, I love to see you and talk about my work.
Very nice to have you on the program and to talk about this. So what led you in this direction? If you had to sum it up in a word, I guess it would be noir.
Yes, I think that I've always been interested in noir. I think it came from watching the late movies on television when I was a kid, you know, Mildred Pierce and Postman Always Rings Twice, and always had a real interest in crime stories and thrillers. I began my writing career, I guess you would say, writing screenplays at first, learning how to write screenplays, learning how to tell a story for film. And I think that sort of underscores my fiction right now, although this is definitely a novel that is meant to be read like read at a slow, contemplative pace, I guess you would say.
It seems that your past work that we have discussed on this program has been more familial. And this tends to be a little more drastic, I guess, in its consequences.
I was really interested in telling this story, looking at the story of this murder in a much more roundabout fashion, kind of considering the town and the effect of the murder on the people of the town, while at the same time the town is beginning to go through this transformation. It starts out in the late 70s on a farm called the Hale Farm, where this family of dairy farmers who have been there for generations have lost everything. And this was happening in the late 70s. A lot of dairy farmers in upstate New York were losing their shirts, losing their farms. So I thought it would be a very interesting setting. And of course, you know, living here and living in this area, I wanted to really emphasize the beauty of the landscape and the farms and the agriculture here at first, and then show how this transformation was just beginning to occur with people discovering this beautiful, idyllic landscape and coming up here for other reasons than farming. The genesis of the idea began with the story of this murder and setting it in this area suited me because there's so many things, so many elements that I wanted to pull into it. One of them, which is the Hudson River School painter, George Innes.
Obviously, geography allows you to do that. But there's also that idea of a small town being not so far away from a big city.
That's right. That's right. And as you know, as in Columbia County, where this is, in my mindset, some of those beautiful towns have really become enclaves for rich New Yorkers over time. So that's sort of an element in the periphery of the novel, the story of the novel. But it's really a story about two families. And the first family, the Hales, who lose their farm. The farm goes into foreclosure. A young couple from New York City come and they buy this old house that's in sort of a ramshackle condition, and they move into it. But they're not your typical New Yorkers. They're struggling. They're a young couple already in the throes of an unraveling marriage. And they move into this house, and immediately things begin to seem very unsettled, particularly for the wife, Catherine. So that's sort of the setup for what's about to happen.
There are four women that this story focuses on: Catherine, as you mentioned, Ella, Willis, and Justine. How did you come up with those four and the dynamic that you wanted to work with?
Those characters sort of came to me. It was interesting. I had read a story in a newspaper about this murder that occurred. It's still an open case where a woman was murdered with an axe, and her husband came home from work and found her, and the little girl was running around the house unattended. That was so interesting to me at the time. This was many years ago that I heard about this case. And, of course, was immediately compelled because I had at the time two small daughters myself. They're now grown up. But so the story sort of stuck with me for all of these years. That became the architecture of the novel when I started thinking about what it must have been like for this person's family. Not only the sense of loss, but then how to live with that. How does that metastasize over many, many years, that I started to think about the various people who this woman might have been in contact with. And one, of course, is a ghost, and her name is Ella. They sort of have a solidarity together in this lonely house where Catherine is trying very hard to keep her life together in the midst of this unraveling marriage, as I said. It's hard, very hard, of course, to be a young mother. Everybody knows that.
Right.
And so I tried to sort of capture the reality of that situation. But it's very strange to be in a house that is already inhabited by some other presence. And I wanted to look at that, write a ghost story, if you will, that allows the reader to entertain this idea of spirits, not because of any kind of cheesy horror film idea, but it really fed into the theme that I was working to establish with George Clare, as an art historian who studies George Innes, the wonderful Hudson River painter, who was a devotee of Swedenborg, who really believed that spirits existed and completely developed these writings about the evidence of heaven in our midst and the afterlife and where we go after we die and all of these things. So it was a way for me to explore these larger questions of life and death and the afterlife, things that really seem to compel people very deeply.
Right.
Within the context of a story, a thriller about this horrible crime.
Elizabeth Brundage is our guest. The name of the novel, All Things Cease to Appear. It is published by Knopf. At what point did you know that it would be a ghost story? And does that suddenly bring you into territory that you think, oh, well, okay, I wasn't expecting that?
It's really interesting, and I've been thinking about this a lot. When you start to write a novel, almost everything in the universe seems to miraculously play into your thinking about it. Things on the radio come on, talking about subjects that you're entertaining in the process of writing. Mm. And so a few things happened that were just wonderful, serendipitous surprises, like one day going to the Clark Museum over in Williamstown and discovering that this woman, this art historian, was talking about George Innes. And it was a complete irony that I was even in Williamstown that day. And there she was. Her name is Adrienne Baxter Bell. She's a wonderful, historian and has written extensively on Innes, and sneaking into that lecture just at the right time really opened up a new world for me, because I wasn't even planning to write about George Innes, really. I knew I was interested in the Hudson River School, but I wasn't sure which painter I wanted to have my character be an expert on. And then when she was talking about Swedenborg, it just opened up this whole sensibility about, you know, the afterlife. And then, of course, the idea of writing about a ghost just seemed very natural. Mm.
The idea of the mysticism of the ghost element and how that marries itself, for want of a better term, with the mysticism just of life and of relationships and being young and going through all of this stuff.
I think there are, we're always moving at such a fast pace in our society that it goes back to when we think about the painters of the Hudson River School, for example, who were so interested in nature and emphasizing the spiritual quality of nature. When I was writing this book, I forced myself to really slow down. I really want the reader to slow down, not to read it quickly, to really read it contemplatively, as if you are sitting on a bench in the middle of some forest. So many times we're moving so quickly that we don't even see what's around us. And so I think that was part of my interest also in the actual writing of the fiction, to really try to look and see, to establish very clearly for the reader where we were in terms of place, what the house was, what the wind felt like coming through the screens, how the light felt, all of the things that maybe a painter would consider, that kind of ties into this sense that we are not really alone, that there are possibly spirits watching us, or that this abstract idea of God, that does God exist or not? We believe he does, but is there really any proof? And so there's this sort of abstract sense of trusting that there's something else around us. This sounds a little bit esoteric, and it doesn't necessarily come through in the novel.
One of the things I found fascinating, because I understand, in mixing with that, though, is this undercurrent, and I think even if I had to explain in a word of what the book is about, there's a lot of guilt here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, guilt plays a huge role.
It does. Guilt is a motivating factor, I think. I was trying to show that in George and Catherine's life, they're trying to live the way they've been taught to live. Catherine is trying to be a good wife and to kind of just live within these constraints that were handed down to her, like everyday China, by her mother, her grandmother. And a lot of people can understand what I mean by that, I believe. So guilt, yes, guilt is a motivating factor also for George Clare, who he entertains this notion that he's a brilliant academic. However, to maintain that image, it becomes very difficult for him. And so it's sort of the quest of doing that and kind of keeping up this appearance leads him into madness, actually, a very dangerous form of madness.
Also fascinating to me when you consider the empathy that you have for these characters, even the ghost, and even a character who is quite sinister.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of George, he's sort of the psychopathic character, and I wanted to show that in his way, his sort of reasoning is very logical in a sense. But although it's perverse to us, for him, it's logical. you know. And the character of Willis was, when I, let me just back up a second, when I was researching this, the particular murder that this, that inspired this novel, I read something about that they had some evidence about the suspect that was had some real strong behavioral issues. They didn't, I had nothing specific, you know, they had done some sort of FBI analysis. And so I couldn't really go with that. It wasn't the sort of book I was writing. So I developed this character of Willis, who is the daughter of a defense attorney, a very powerful defense attorney in New York City. And she's grown up with this sense that people are all essentially have evil in them, and that there are just, there's this whole array of things that people are willing to do when they become desperate. And so she has, she's sort of jaded, and I love her. I think she's, she was one of my favorite characters because she's kind of represents the deepest sort of trouble that a young woman can have psychologically, you know, a sense of true insecurity and uncertainty about the world that she's living in, and she ends up getting involved with him. And that relationship is a scary relationship that the purpose of that from a purely academic standpoint is that it is to sort of show the true nature of George Clare, the character.
This strikes me as a novel that you would not give a couple as a wedding present.
Right. Yes. No, you definitely would not. You definitely would not. No, no.
I mean, that, there's that, a contemplation of marriage here.
Yes, it is. It is. I think every marriage has moments of doubt. Of course, you have moments of doubt where you are questioning this person that you're married to, that you're sleeping night after night with in the same bed. So I think there's an element of that surely between Catherine and George. You know, the thing that grounds them is their daughter. She's the glue that holds them together. But she also sort of becomes this prize that only one of them can keep. So that's an element also that underscores the larger story.
Elizabeth Brundage is our guest. The name of the book is All Things Cease to Appear. It is published by Knopf. We touched on it a little bit, but I just want to go a bit more into the art and the art history and why that was important for you to incorporate in the novel.
Yeah, I think when you live in this region, it becomes very obvious very quickly how beautiful it is from Columbia County and up to Lake George and, you know, the Adirondacks. And it's just so magnificent. There's so many beautiful places to go. I started writing this when we were living actually in Slingerlands, but out towards New Scotland, which is for those of you who are not in the area, it's in a small little town outside of Albany. And we were living in an 1830s house, a beautiful house, which I loved, which we have since sold. But it was on a lot of land, and I would often walk the dog all way, way back towards the woods. And I really try to absorb this kind of 19th century sensibility to help me really appreciate the work of the Hudson River School painters, but in particular George Ennis, who is really a fantastic painter. I mean, when you look at his paintings, you can't help but feeling some kind of emotion. They really generate an emotional response, and I think that's what he intended to do. So I thought he was really the perfect choice for George Clare, my character, the art historian, because he embarked on this study of this painter, and it brought out all of the things within him that he was wrestling with intellectually, emotionally. So it really served me well as a writer, because I could really develop some of those aspects. To be specific, more specific, George, my character, is not a believer. He's a cynic, and he believes in, you know, that the world is a very dark and hard place. So he's not somebody who is sort of, he's not a romantic in any stretch of the imagination. And George Innes, the painter, has a really open, loving kind of devotion to this spiritual ideal of nature, and that comes out in this Swedenborgian philosophy that he so subscribes to.
What is it, do you think, about living in a, and I'm eventually going to bring this back to you, which is of living in a place that is physically beautiful, which much of upstate New York is, and you have these gorgeous views that have inspired writers and painters and artists of all types. What is it about that that can be so good for the artwork and often so damaging to the human being?
It's such a great question. I think that when you live in a place where there are vast landscapes, vast land, vast amounts of fields, and it's not terribly populated, you feel very, on the one hand, you can feel very isolated, as Catherine does in the novel. She feels very isolated, having come from New York City, and she's there in this, on this farm, this sort of cursed farm, very much at odds with her situation. And I think that's very real for many people who live in more rural areas. You feel sort of detached from the rest of the world. And also there's no way that you don't notice the sky, the sun, the light, the weather. These things become incredibly important to you. And they sort of orchestrate your days. You know, it's the wind is blowing. But it does for everybody, no matter where you live. But it's particularly noticeable when you live in a rural place. And I think that on the one hand, that allows us a tremendous amount of intellectual freedom, because you're not being directly influenced by anyone else around you. And so you are very much in touch with your own inner world. And I think that would be the way to answer that question, that why it can be terrific as an artist to live in a place like that, an isolated place, and truthfully to produce any kind of art, whether it's painting, writing, music. I think it demands so much isolation, because you have to sort of tap into what it is inside of you that drives you to do it.
When you are done with a book like this that is psychological and so emotional, does it stay with you a while?
It did. I mean, right now, it's been a while since I finished it, so I've let go of it. But I carried those characters around for years, and this book was something of an ordeal, because it, unlike the other three that came to me much faster and were much more strictly sort of fast-paced narratives, this book meandered, it whispered, it slammed a lot of doors. I was feeling like my ghost character, you know, waiting. But I think that I really try to show the effects of all of the things that are happening in the novel, from these three brothers who lose their family, they lose their farm, and are very disrupted, and begin to heal through the help of Catherine, who is now in their old house and who they begin to work for. And their perspective starts to open up a bit for all three of them. I really felt like they were part of me, you know, so it was hard to let go of them.
Elizabeth Brundage's new book is All Things Cease to Appear. It is published by Knopf. Elizabeth, thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thank
to have
you so
program.
Much. I hope this made sense.
Absolutely. Again, Elizabeth Brundage's new novel is All Things Cease to Appear. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can also listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.